Okay, so yesterday we started Hagalas Kalim and Libun and the like. So we're going to continue today in that Limun of Simun Kuf Chaf Aleph. Only seven Sifim, as we mentioned yesterday. But we're going to try to hit the highlights at least of Hagalah and Libun. So the one topic that we did not get to yesterday was that although we learned about the principle of Kibolo Kafpolto, but we have to ask, you know, what does that mean, Kibolo Kafpolto? What does it mean, the way that it's used, that the way that it's Boleya? Very often, utensils are used at different heat levels. So do you follow the majority of the usage, Rov Tashmisho? Or even if it was used once with direct Libun, by accident even, would you say that, okay, now that it was used once with direct fire, now it's going to need Libun because it absorbed that time in such an intense way? So if you have a fleishik spoon that you usually use to eat soup from a klisheni, but once you used it, in a kli rishon to mix the soup on the stove, so now it's going to need kli rishon kashering instead of klisheni kashering. Or what if you were just testing something, you put a marshmallow on it, and you hit a little lighter underneath it to see if it would roast the marshmallow that way or something like that. Oh, so now it's direct eish. Now it's going to need libun chamur because it came in direct contact with the fire. So how do we do that? Do we say that since it was used once for a kli rishon, it needs hagala, or do you follow the majority usage and it only needs kli sheni? So the tour in Or Chaim Sim Tav Nun Aleph says that you always follow the highest level of heat that the spoon came into contact with, that the kli came into contact with. So if it was once used on the fire, then that's the way it has to be kashered. It's going to, if it was once used directly on the fire, then a kli rishon, let's say on the fire, then it's going to require hagala and a kli rishon. Beis Yosef quotes that the Rif and the Rashba disagree, and they say that we follow the Rov Tashmisho, the majority of the usage. Comes on Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tav Nun Aleph Siv Vav, and not surprisingly, Pastin's like the Rif and the Rashba. He says, Al Kli, Holchenbo Achar Rov Tashmisho, Hilkach, Ka'aros, Afal Pishal, Fa'amin, Shtamshem, and Bekli Rishon, Ala Eish. When you have plates, even though sometimes you might use them in a kli rishon ala eish, kivan sherov tashmishon huki biiroi shema'ara aleihen mikli rishon kachu echsheven. Since rov tashmishon is with iroi, the hechsher is going to be with iroi as well. That you follow the majority of the kli of the kli's usage, and then comes along the Rama and he says, V'yesh machmir in the hagil akarus b'kli rishon v'kein hu haminag, that there are those that are machmir to do it afka b'kli rishon, and that is the minag, meaning the minag is like the tour, not like the Rif and the Rashba, and we kasher the kli based on the highest level of heat that it ever encountered. The Mishnah Brura in Sivkatan Mem Zayin over there says that even according to the Rama, in a Bidyevit case, we could follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, meaning it's not totally outvoted. The Shitas HaRif HaRashba is not totally outvoted. It's Yesh, the way the Ramah quoted it is that it's Yesh Machmirin to do this way. Kein Hu HaMinag, not Kein Hu HaLacha. Meikar Adin, really the Mechaber is correct, but we try to be Machmir to kasher it in the better possible way. But how do we understand exactly what the svara would be? Meaning, I get the difference between why I need different levels of kashering. It's because there are different levels of blios in the kli, and I'm assuming that I'm only going to be able to draw out the blios when I expose it to the same kind of heat that the blios went in with. And if I don't expose it to that same kind of heat, then there are still going to be blios that are left behind. So what's a svara to say go with rov tashmisho? You know, let's imagine you have two kalim, right? I have two spoons. One spoon I use once a month, but whenever I use that spoon, I use it in a kli rishon directly al gabei eish. Another spoon I use every single day, and 28 days out of the 30 days in the month I use it in my soup bowl in a kli sheni, but 2 days out of the month I put it into a kli rishon al gabei eish. So you're going to tell me the spoon that I use once every 30 days in the kli rishon al gabei eish, Oh, so that's going to need a real hagala b'kli rishon, and the spoon that I use twice a month in b'kli rishon gabeish, because rov tashmisho is not that way. Rov tashmisho is in a kli sheni. Now it only needs hagala in a kli sheni. Meaning it's hard to matter. Why does rov tashmisho matter? It should matter how many blios there are, where the blios are. Can you find those blios? If you really say kibolo kach polto, you should require the highest level of heat that the kli ever came in contact with to make sure that you fully draw out all of the blios. So if a spoon is usually used as a kli sheni and you once mix soup on the fire, so good. So now you're going to need hagala and a kli rishon, because kli sheni is not going to fully release all of the blios that it was able to absorb while it was being used to stir your soup on the fire. So the Beis Yosef obviously is bothered by this. If you look in the Dir Shemeshah Berurah, Sim Tafnan Ali, he quotes the Beis Yosef, quotes the Rashba over there, and he says the reason we go Basarov Tashmisha Shalakli, Af Bekli Shabala Chametz, or called over Oser Kshulcham, Vein Matsrich Magala Bechal Bliazu, Kos of Beis Yosef, Shem Rashba, I'm reading from the Trisha, Shahol Midau Raisa, from the Dir Shemeshah, Hol Midau Raisa, Kli Sheinu Ben Yomo, Mutter Below Agala, Kishagazru Chazal, Shalolish Damishbo, Shami Yishamshu Bekli Ben Yomo, Lo Gazru Shetzar Chagala El Kfi Ofen Rav Tashmish Shalakli. Meaning, the whole thing's only Drabanan anyway. Once you get Teira Ben Yomo, there are no Blios. Meaning, there are no Blios that are problematic anymore. The Blios are already in the Ben Yomo, they're already Tampogum. So, since the whole thing is a Chumra Midrabanan, the Rabbanan had the right to formulate how they want to be Machmir. So, Midaraisa, a person could really just use the dishes after 24 hours, because you possibly know Sintamav comes Mutter. But Chazal didn't allow that. Chazal asked for the usage of Neina Ben Yomo Pat, because you might come to use a Ben Yomo Pat, so you have to kasher the pot. When Chazal said that you need to kasher the pot, they also said you could follow Rov Tashmisho, because in essence, the Kli is really Mutter anyway. Yeah.
It's an interesting Neina Ben Yomo after Ben Yomo, if the Ben Yomo case wouldn't be like that. Meaning, we're not replicating.
Meaning, wanted to use it Ben Yomo, right? Meaning, what would happen if you were to do the lesser form of kashrut? Let's say you did hagalah and there was shishim. Let's say you did hagalah and there was shishim, so you didn't need to rely on the fact that the tam is already pogum in order not to retrade for the kli, right? You did hagalah and there was shishim within 24 hours, so it would turn out that you can't follow Rav Tashmisha. Right? And it would turn out that whenever you're dealing with a real Doraisa, when you have a real Tom that's coming out, then you're not going to be allowed to follow Rav Tashmisha. Yeah, so it's a little bit funny. Chazanish writes a little different. Chazanish writes in Aruch Chaim over there, in Sivkat Yotes, or Simon Kuf Yotes rather, Chazanish writes, V'od delo nemar lemezel basa Rav Tashmisha, Ela b'chiluv tzonin v'chamin o b'chiluv bishul v'tashmish al yidei or u'b'zeh hishvul chacham midasan l'hakel b'hechshah shol rov v'tashmish avu kli shol rov v'tashmish u'b'heter u'miyut b'isir v'adei tzarech hechshah afil v'ena ben yama. He says even according to the Shulchan Aruch that you follow rov v'tashmish shol kli, he sort of doesn't give it an answer, he just qualifies the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. He said that's only by a non-kosher kli that was used at different heat levels, or a fleishig dish that was used at different heat levels, and you now want to make it milchigs. But if you have a kosher dish that's usually used at a kli sheni heat level, and it was used only once with non-kosher in a kli rishon heat level, you would need to do agalah kli rishon. Meaning, rov tashmisho means rov tashmisho of the problem would need to be the lower level heat in order to be allowed to kasha with the lower level heat. Not rov tashmisho of the kli in its entirety. That's mistaber, because the whole reason you need to kasher the dish in the first place is because the iser entered the kli. Meaning, let's say you have a kli that uses a soup spoon and your soup is always kosher. And one time, someone else was making soup on the stovetop, you walked into the kitchen, you said, oh, that soup looks like you could use a stir, and you take your soup spoon that you always just use for soup out of the bowl, in a kli sheni, and you give it a stir, and then the housekeeper says, thank you very much for stirring my soup in my trefa pot, my trefa soup in my trefa pot. Oyvey, what did I just do, right? So this spoon is always used in the kli sheni for kosher. One time I used it for non-kosher, it happened to have been in the kli rishon. Yeah, but the only thing I need to kasher out is what just happened, is when I stirred that pot on the fire. So Chaznish very mistah there, that now you're not going to be able to say, oh, but Rov Tashmisho is Bekli Sheni. It doesn't help that Rov Tashmisho is Bekli Sheni. Whatever you use in the Kli Sheni doesn't need to be kashered out. So that's how the Chaznish says. So the way to kasher is through Agol in the Kli Rishon. But a non-kosher Kli, that in any case needs to be kashered because it was used in the Kli Sheni, so then you could follow the majority of its usage. But it's difficult, meaning it chaps a huge nafkamina, like we said. Meaning if you say like that, Beis Yosef, b'shem the Rashba, that the svara is that anyway, Tehillah ben Yomo, it would turn out that that if you were to kasher while it is ben Yomo at a subpar, you know, following Rav Tashmisho, then it's not really kasher. Then you really have a problem. There's also a Magen Avraham in our Chaim that says not to kasher from milchik to fleishig, a much celebrated Magen Avraham. This one is spoken about a lot because it's very nogel lemaisa. Sometimes a person has, you get this question, always people inheriting dishes from the grandmother who, let's say, moved to Florida, let's make it nice, right? So she's getting rid of all of her dishes, or she decided that she's, 90 years young, she wants a new set of dishes, whatever. So she's, but she has this magnificent set of milchik dishes, and you're like, milchik dishes? When would I ever need milchik dishes? So you want to use them for fleishig dishes. So the Magen Avraham says there's a minug that we don't kasher from milchik to fleishig or fleishig to milchik. However, there are many exceptions to that minhag. Number one, Poskim point out, you can kasher from milchik to fleishig once you're kashering for Pesach. Meaning, if you're kashering anyway from chametz, so then you can take your fleishig, your milchik dish, grandma's milchik chametz dishes, kasher them for Pesach, and use them for whatever you want in Pesach, milchik or fleishig, and then use them going forward for whichever way you want to use them. Second of all, if you're kashering for treif, if in any way it was treif, and you're kashering for treif, you can kasher from milchik to fleishig. Rabbi Heinemann wrote in one of the kashrus currents that if you have Bubby's dishes, so order some McDonald's and use the dishes, don't eat, but use the dishes, treif up the dishes good, really treif them up, and then once you treif them up, so now you can use them for, Basra B'chol is probably not a great idea, but treif them up in some way or another, and then once you treif them up, so now you'll be allowed to kasher them. So it's an eitzah if you want to lend them to your non-Jewish neighbors, say have a party, make a barbecue with this, enjoy, and then you'd be allowed to to kasher them, because it's an exception to the rule. It's not part of the minhag when you're kashering for other purposes, not just for milchik to fleishig, because the point was people used to only have, you understand why such a minhag developed, people used to not have that many dishes, and if they were constantly kashering back and forth, so it would lead to a lot of confusion. They would forget what it was last used for, so it's much easier to have things identified as one thing or another. But people didn't kasher for Pesach all that often. It's once a year. People didn't kasher from treif unless there was a problem that came up, unless something became treif. People didn't keep treif dishes around their house, so it wasn't included in that minhag. They just didn't want people flipping back and forth and then forgetting what is its current status, and the 24 hours really pass since the last time I used it. It's asking for trouble. A third exception is that you can kasher to parith. Meaning, you don't want to use it for fleishigs. You just want to use it for parv. You just don't want it to be milchigs anymore. So you can kasher to parv. And that happens, that's really the most common case. Because most of the time you get a shayla, I should start forwarding you the kashering shaylas now. But most of the time you get a shayla, it's, my husband took the parv spatula and used it in the milk frying pan to make a cheese omelet or something like that. And it was my parva spatula. So whenever you hear the word parva, it's like, okay, great. No problem. Everything's kosher. Frying pan is kosher. Spatula is kosher. Omelet's kosher. Everything's kosher. But I don't want to lose this spatula. I need this for parva. I don't want to use it for milchiks anymore. So to kasher from milchiks to parva is also okay. Another exception is libun. This is one of the nafkaminas between Libun destroys the tam entirely, so it could be done from milchik to fleishig. That's why people self-clean the oven from milchik to fleishig. because that's one of the reasons, one of the clues that you have by the oven, is you don't have to worry about the fact that you're flipping it back from milchik to fleishik, is because it's you're using some form of libun usually when you're obviously when you're kashering, when you're kashering the oven. So
does,
that's
does the libun getting that equally.
It doesn't address the problem.
Yeah.
I guess it's that I'm not sure. I'm not sure why. I guess it's that it's more of an ordeal to do a libun maybe, and so people wouldn't do it so easily. I don't know, but the poskim seems to be comfortable with libun. The minig is probably. By the oven, the real, the better svara for the oven is that the minig is by kelim that are interchangeable, where you should have two. I mean, Chazal didn't want you to have one set of dishes and use it for milk inflation. But they never expected, who has two ovens? They never imagined such a thing, that people would have two ovens. So the minig didn't develop for things like an oven. It develops for spoons and forks and plates and pots and things like that. I remember in the OU office once they were asking Rav Schachter about a restaurant that had purchased the facility from a restaurant, from a kosher restaurant that was there before, and the previous kosher restaurant was a milchik restaurant, but they wanted to open up a fleishik restaurant, but many of the kalim were very usable for them, so they want to know if they can kasher them. So normally when you take over a restaurant and you're going to kasher, you have all the trefa kalim that you're going to kasher, so it's no problem kashering trefa kalim, or even if you're going to buy used kalim, there's sometimes specialized kalim that you buy, so you assume, if you're buying them used, you assume that it's treif, and then you can kasher them. But Rav Schachter thought that it's not included in the minhag, that this minhag was for someone's home. It's not included in the minhag, and the whole chashash is going to go back and forth and back and forth. You're opening up a milchik restaurant, you have a flesh of kalim, it's going to happen once, and that's going to be it. You're not going to go back and forth at all. He thought it's not nogeya to a restaurant, and that he did not have a problem allowing them to kasher in that situation. Now, let's start talking about how to do the actual kashering of different kelim. So let's start with libun, even though it's not exactly the order, but let's start with libun. So how do you kasher something that became treif? So first it's important to understand, again, like we said, that the differences between hagala and libun. Whenever a kli becomes non-kosher, you're not allowed to use it because of the bleos that are obviously there, and then could come out, they're going to leave the walls, get absorbed in your food, tam ki ikr, and it's going to be a problem. Libun destroys the bleos, it burns the bleos. Hagala removes the bleos, it extracts the bleos. So a kli needs to be kasher through hagala. If you do libun, matav mana, it's even better, because instead of the flavor leaving the kli, the flavor gets entirely destroyed. Someone just asked me, I just got a shayla about 10 minutes before shir started. Someone texted me, I'm in a rental home in Orlando, how do I kasher the grill? So a grill is a classic libun situation. It's just not easy to do libun on a grill. But, it's obvious that that's a libun situation. It's with direct fire. So, by the way, how do you talk to do libun on a grill if you're not going to sit there with a blowtorch? A lot of people make a mistake with a blowtorch. First of all, you should never use a blowtorch. It's dumb. Unless you know what you're doing, you should never use a blowtorch. It's extremely dangerous. But even if you're not risk averse and you're gonna use a blowtorch, you're probably doing it wrong. Meaning, in order to use a blowtorch properly to really kasher, yeah, each spot has to get red hot. So a lot of times people say, "Oh, it's a blowtorch. I'll use it like just run it up and down." That doesn't do anything. You have to hit each spot for a few seconds to the point, whatever it is, 15 seconds, to the point that spot gets to a certain heat level, which we'll discuss in a moment, what that heat level is. So it's extremely tedious. It's extremely time-consuming to really kasher properly with a blowtorch. So how else do you get that level of heat when you're kashering a grill? So the practice in the kasher's industry when kashering a grill is that they take the grates. The grates are the only part that hit with direct fire. What we do with the cavity of the grill is a different story. But they take the grates, they take them off the grill, they find a slab of concrete somewhere, they buy charcoal briquettes, like you would have for the old-fashioned grills, the with the good carcinogens, you know, and they lined the floor with those briquettes. Then they put the grate on top of it. Then put another layer of charcoal briquettes on top of it. So they sandwich the grate with these charcoal briquettes, and they light it on fire. And they just wait till it burns out. It takes whatever, a half hour, an hour, till it burns out. So they assume that it's mamish engulfed in flames for that hour. So it's going to be kosher. And when you look at that grate afterwards, it is clean. It really does the job. But that's tedious, and it's a little bit dangerous also. You know, it's unless you have a fire pit or somewhere that you can control it. So Liban is generally not a, other than a self-cleaning oven, which the worst that's going to happen is going to break the oven. Liban is generally not a great idea to actually do if you can avoid it. I told him how to kasher. I told him this is what you would have to do. I said you would have to, this is how to kasher the grates. Then you'd have to either put foil where the grill touches, the grates touch the grill, or blowtorch those spots where it sits on the grill. We'll discuss that later maybe. And then turn the cavity of the grill, turn it on for an hour and let it get as hot as it gets. I said, or go to the local 7-Eleven and for $20 buy a disposable grill. So I suspect that he did that. It's probably cheaper to do that than to buy even the charcoal that it takes to go through this process. That's what we were talking about. Thank God they have these cheap, throwaway grills. They're very, very useful. All those summers I went on trips with my kids when they were younger, when my son Yonah was in eighth grade, his Rebbe did like a grand raffle at the end of the year for like, if you ever, it was a whole year of tickets that you, I don't know how to be an elementary school Rebbe, but there are a lot of prizes involved. So the prize that he won was a portable grill. It got, I don't know why, it's a strange prize. His friend got a basketball, he got a portable grill. So it got like five summers of use. We went all over, the portable grill is very good. He got a total of the grades, okay, so. That's the other thing. You wouldn't have to tumble the grates if it's a rental house in Orlando. It's owned by non-Jew. But okay. So within Liban, as we pointed out, although we didn't get into any detail, there are two different categories. There's Liban Chamor and Liban Ka. Liban Chamor means that you get to the heat level, that it gets so hot from the blowtorch that sparks start flying out of the dish. The way that our metals are made, that will never happen. Meaning, you just have to get to the heat. They're made in such a way, I'm not sure whether they're protected or something, but you're not going to have sparks flying out. But you have to get to that level of heat that sparks should fly out. Meaning, when you self-clean your oven, you don't see like fireworks inside of your oven. There aren't sparks flying off the walls. But it gets to that level of heat. We'll discuss what that level of heat is soon. Liban Kal is ad shekash nisrof alav mibuchutz, that it gets so hot that straw will burn if it touches the inside wall of the pot. So if you're heating it from the outside and you put a piece of straw on the other side, that it will singe the straw. So when you blowtorch the outside of the pot, the inside reaches a heat level that could burn straw that comes in contact with it. Not like a drinking straw, like straw, like a farmer between his teeth kind of straw. What exactly is that? The Taz in Sim Tafnun Aleph in Or Chaim in Sim Katan Chaz says the Ein Sarach Liban Gadol V'Sagi Atcheyat Zaledus M'Shevreim Oshi Yisof Hakash. For Liban Kal, the inside and the outside of the pot need to reach a heat level of Yat Zaledus Bo. Lemaisa, how it translates, is that if the oven gets to 450 degrees, we normally assume that that's Liban Kal. The Taz there also explains when do you use Liban Chamor versus Liban Kal, meaning, I understand, there's Hagala for lower level things. Well, what's Liban Kal? If it needs Liban, it needs Liban. So Liban Kal is used if a pan becomes treif, that's Isura Bala, the Kli absorbs some non-kosher flavor. Liban Chamor is when it becomes treif. Liban Kal is when it's a Tera Bala. When you want to switch it from Fleishig or vice versa, from Fleishig to Milchig or vice versa, so that's a Tera Bala. So it never absorbed any Isser. All you want to do is switch it. Liban Kal is also used as an alternative for Agala. Meaning, if you can't do Agala for whatever reason, it can't get wet, but it can get really hot. I don't know, for whatever reason, you can't do Agala. So then you can use Liban Kal. So Liban Kal, again, is either a Hetera Bala, that where Liban will be required, but it's Hetera Bala, so it doesn't need as severe of a Liban. Or even if it's Yisura Bala, but it requires, but it only should have required Agala, so you use Liban Kal as an upgrade to Hagala. Now we said libul chamur is actually nitzotzos nitazim, the sparks have to come out. Like we said, it doesn't happen in our ovens. It doesn't happen in our pots. No modern pot that you use, well, the sparks will have sparks coming out of it. So in the Oel Yaakov, he explains why. He writes bismanenu. There's a lot less. He says yesh harbe pachlus avir betoch gufa kli. There's less airspace. It's more condensed metal. V'atama nivla bo hu ma'at ma'od. So it leaves very little space for tam to be nivla in it. V'olchein k'shem l'cham ma'kli b'chom govola, af amim shav tam ablu ahofech l'pecham, even though the tam is becoming totally singed, b'chol ofen ein yikar mitzotzos klal. But you don't see sparks coming out. K'ivin sheyesh ma'at ma'od tam shenepach l'pecham. Because there's so little tam in there that can be burnt. That's why nitzotzos don't come out. Meaning the sparks are caused by tiny air gaps in between the metal of the pot. But the metal used today to make pots is a lot more concentrated, it's much more condensed, and therefore no sparks fly out. So how can you tell when you've achieved libul chamur if you can't see any sparks? So the OU and most poskim say libul chamur is about 900 degrees Fahrenheit, 482 degrees Celsius, and the kli needs to reach that heat level even for just a couple of seconds. It doesn't have to stay at that heat level very long, but it has to get to that level for libul to work. A blowtorch can reach, thousands of degrees Celsius, meaning it gets way, way, way hotter. So, if you need to do Liban in your house, a candle can get to 1,000 degrees Celsius. If you need to do Liban in your house, you just stovetop can do Liban.
What's the smart of that Hetera Bala required less than
Yisur? I think in general, meaning we're always a little more makel with Hetera.
How does it stem with
Kabbalah Kach Polto? Yeah. Meaning it's not going to take anything more out or anything less out. And you have to keep going back to that svara that once it's Tam Lufgam anyway, I guess. Anyone have a better svara? I guess you gotta keep assuming that you gotta wait 24 hours. But you don't have to wait 24 hours for Liban. So what Tak is the svara? Taka is this far, because you could do Liban Kal within 24 hours also. Don't know. Anyone come across anything? Alright, that's homework. Okay? We'll get back to each other tomorrow, Wednesday. Or tomorrow on text. What part of the Kli needs Liban? Meaning, do you need Liban on the entire Kli or only on the part that came in contact with the Yisr? So the Rashba writes that the entire kli needs libun, because you assume that the non-kosher taste spread throughout the entire kli, right? Cham tzasu cham kulo. So if tam went into some part of the kli, went into all of the kli. But the tur and the ran hold that we say no, kabbalah kach polto. So you can say cham tzasu cham kulo on the bliya. You can say cham tzasu cham kulo on the plata. And if you're not going to say it on the bliya, then you won't say it on the plata. So if only half of the skewer was used for non-kosher food, only that half needs libun, because the flavor leaves the skewer the same way it entered. Shulchan Aruch and Sivvav over here. Shulchan Aruch and Sivvav. Kli Machos. Avul Bishiyesh Omrim Shem Nishtamish Bo Yisru B'Mekzaso Nesar Kulo Misham Dacham Mekzaso Cham Kulo Avul Inyan Hechshero Lo Alulo Hechshar Achi Yachshir Kulo Bein Linyan Agala Bein Linyan Libun. Says the Shulchan Aruch, like the Rashba, that even though it became treif only by some of the kli touching the non-kosher food, when you kasher it, you need to kasher the entire kli. Now we say cham tzasu cham kulo l'chumra, but not l'kula on the kasher. The Rama adds, v'davke nishtamish b'kulo. Avam yiduah shlo nishtamish rak b'ktsaso k'bolo kach balto. The Rama says, no. That's only because I'm concerned that you might have used the whole kli. So you think, oh, it's a knife. Probably I only used the blade of the knife and not the handle of that. But do you know for sure that that knife wasn't dropped into the soup or wasn't, I don't know, that at some point that knife didn't land on, you know, when you were cutting into a steak on the grill, that it didn't land on top of the steak or on top of the grill? At some point, do you know for sure? You don't know for sure. You don't know when you were cutting, if maybe some of the handle also came in contact with it. You don't know. But if you know, says the Rama, so then it's mistaver that you could rely on chamuk sas cham kulo for the kashering, just like you rely on, just like it became treif in the first place. The shach in Sifkaton Yud Ches, writes that kibol kach palto, says the shach besagi behechshem k'tzaso v'hainu b'di'evad avil chachil gam kein tzarech lachshir kulo. That even the Rambam would say that you should be machshir the whole thing lechachila. But the Rambam is just saying that b'diavad it would be good enough to just be machshir some of it. There's another thing that about libun. What is the difference between libun and hagala? So we said that when it comes to But the primary nafkmin is, of course, the 24 hours, right? You have to wait 24 hours for Hagala, you don't have to wait 24 hours for libun. In order to achieve libun chamur, the OU says 900 degrees Fahrenheit is libun chamur. In order to achieve libun kal, it depends how long you keep the heat level up. The way they say it is, if you can get it to 550 degrees for an hour, you're safely at libun kal. 450 degrees for an hour and a half, you're safely at libun kal. They even rely on 375 degrees for 2 hours to rely on libun kal. That's helpful sometimes in the toaster oven that maybe doesn't really get to 450, but will get to 375. So if you just leave it on long enough, then you might get to libun kal or something like that. Now, Hagala works differently. Then libun hagala extracts the absorbed flavor from the walls of the kli and puts it into the water. Libun burns it, as we said. So there are three steps to do hagala properly. Step number one to do hagala properly, Shulchan Aruch writes in Tafnun Aleph Sif Gimel, you have to take off all the rust and all the dirt that's on the pot. Mishnah Berurah explains, because we learn from the pasuk ach es hazahav, only the gold. There could be no chatzitza between the kli and the waters that do the hagala. So you have to take any chatzitza, even though it may not be food particles, you have to take off any chatzitza between the kli and the waters of the hagala. Now why? Why do you have to take off any chatzitza? So there are two reasons for it. Mishnah Berurah Sifkat Chafal quotes the Taz Sifkat Vav, that the makor of the din is in Parsha of Hagalas Klei Medion, Aches HaZahav, that it can only be kashu when there's no rust and it's just the gold in direct hot water. But if there's rust, you have to be choshesh that maybe there's a mashu hu chametz and the rust is covering up that mashu hu chametz, and therefore Hagalah is not going to work. Because Hagala doesn't work for that which is be'en. Hagala is only going to work on blios. So number one, why do I have to take off the rust? The possibility that under the rust is hiding a little bit of a be'en, a little bit of a mashahu of be'en. The rush in the second parak of Pesachim, and Simon Zion writes, that it's not that there's a be'en. It's that the rust itself will prevent the blios from leaving. That the blios have to have where to escape to, and the blios will be trapped inside if there's rust over the kli. In Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in Sif Yud Zayin, he says that only the rust on the inside of the kli, in the place where you use the kli, the kvius, needs to be removed. But any rust that's on the outer part of the kli that you don't use, that you never use for chametz, even though sometimes it could be that chametz will reach there even mibachutz, since rov hapa'amim the chametz doesn't get there, so you don't have to be choshesh that maybe there's mamashes of chametz in there, and you don't have to remove it at all. According to the Rush, though, it wouldn't make a difference. Meaning, the point is that Shulchan Aruch HaRav says a good nafkamina between these two shittos, between the Taz in Sifkat and Vav, and what the Rush writes in the second paragraph of Pesachim, as to why it is they have to move the rust, is what if the rust is on the part of the kli where it's not a reasonable chashash that there's a mashu of be'en underneath the rust. because it's on the outside of the kli. You don't even put anything on the outside of the kli. There's no food that touches the outside of the kli. But as far as blios escaping, that might be a concern. So there's no chashash that the rust is covering the food. But according to the Rush, it's still going to be a barrier, and it's not going to allow the flavor to leave. So how do we paskin? So Mishnah Berurah, Sifkat L'Chaf Beis, paskins like the Taz, like the first explanation, and therefore you don't have to remove the rust on the outside of a pot before doing Hagala. But many people try to, if there is rust, for the most part, when we have rusty kelim, you chuck them. But if you're going to keep it rusty clean, you want to clean off the rust, you would probably clean off all of the rust. When it comes to libun, you don't have to take off the rust because the flame will just destroy it anyway. So if you look in Mishnah Berurah in Tafnan Aleph Sekhon Chavdal, he writes, "V'tzarich libun d'hainu she'aniach k'chal baras al makom ahu u'belibun ein tzarich lahavir ha'chaluda ki ha'esh yavir sakol." Now don't worry about taking off rust; the esh is going to get rid of everything. Right?
Aren't both shatim true
No, I mean, whether you have to be choshesh of a mashahu is not a mitzius. That's a question of how much you have to be choshesh. Right? And also whether blios, I don't know, is that an agreed upon mitzius that blios can't emerge through rust? I don't know. Could be that that's a machlok
and mitzius. That's what the pasuk is telling us. The pasuk is the mechadish the mitzius to us.
That the pasuk, well, the pasuk is telling me one thing or the other. Either the pasuk is telling me you can't trust it, that you can't trust that that you got all the bet and off, or the pasuk is telling me it's not going to work.
I guess I don't understand. If I rust on the outside of a plate, why does that prevent when I do agala on it from coming?
Yeah, because you can't do agala only on the inside. You got to do. We assume that blio somehow got through and through. Meaning, saying kavolah kach poltos. So as long as I just magil the inside of the plate, that should be
enough.
The rim, yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. You have to get anywhere that it's reasonable to assume that food might have touched. Meaning, you can't just do mamish around the rim. You have to do like a little lower. You have to build the rim around, the construct room, so that it overflows, because on the top part of the outside of the pot. So why on the outside of the kli over here would you have to remove rust out of the concern that the blios aren't going to leave? The blios never got in through that side. Yeah?
Are we assuming that if once they get in the kli, they can move wherever they want?
Or the future...
Because if they can move throughout the kli and it's like fluid in there, then maybe...
Yeah, but why then would the rim around the pot work? And we paskin that. La halacha. Yeah. Yeah, so how does it say? I don't know, Mishnah Berurah with me. I don't know, Mishnah Berurah. You want to bring it? Okay.
Right. Explain. Thank you.
What do you say, Tafu? You have the right page also? Okay. Says the Mishnah Berurah. Kol chaluda. דחסיב בפרשס הגלוס קלי מדיין אחס עזב, כלומר רק אס עזב, דהיינו כשאין שם חלודה רק עזב, בלבד מועל אס הגל להפלות הפלואה, אבל כשיש שם חלודה, יש לך שם, יש שם משהו מן החמץ, והחלודה מחסהו, ולזה לא מהני הגל, כי אין הגל ומשהו בעין. Right, that's the first sheeta, that's the Taz, what do they do in the Dershu over here? Is that anything nice? Now's not time to explore. וכל זה בחלודה שיש בקצס ממשוס, שקורן רוסט, Shek shegorin also misham yesham kama afrurin, where it like turns to you feel mamashus and turns to dust. Shaz yeshlach Hashem yesh tachteh mashu mamashus. He is rebem vechulde machseil. Avol nein vechulde mashus klal rak mara bilvad. Kmo shenim tzolvam sheyeshach v'sadnimus. Right, you get that a lot. People say there's a black splotch. I don't feel it. There's no mamashus to it. It's just it's so that's not rust. Shanu korin plakin ein kpeda. Okay, Oh, I thought he quoted the other shita also. He only quotes that shita. You don't have to have a Shulchan Aruch Rav, do you? He only quotes the shita Shulchan Aruch Rav. Something that recommended that suggests the Nafkamina. I don't know. He only quoted the other shita. Yeah, okay, so you just pass them straight like the first one. Yeah. The Ramah in Tafnun Aleph Sif Hey adds a kol hakelim sheyesh masadakim al grumos v'chaluda v'betoch kli v'lo yuchlu nakron l'kosan ein la'gilan shichlu nivur b'makom ha'sedek v'chaluda. If you have a kli that has small crevices, cracks, can't be fully cleaned out, Libun will work for that also. I mean, we pointed out yesterday, one of the means between Libun and Agalus, that doesn't need to be clean. So Libun will do the cleaning. So if there are parts that you can't clean out, just do Libun, and that will solve the problem for you. Yeah. The second step in performing Agala, after you've cleaned the Kli, is making sure that it hasn't been used in the last 24 hours. The Ramah in Sif Beis, over here, says this pretty explicitly, right? Ein lahagil shum kli calls manshu ben yomo, right? You're not allowed to be magil a kli calls manshu ben yomo, and the reason for that is obviously to get to the point. It's a nosin tam of gam. The Rama says the ein lishtamish b'mei hagala, you shouldn't use the mei hagala, and the grass of cut design says chum rabi alma. The nosin tam of gam motor ve'im b'zem shum vatalis v'chachil shem iskam levatam. Why can't I use the Mehagala? Oh, because it's got all the treif of Blios in there. But the treif of Blios aren't even treif. It's after 24 hours. So that's only a Chumra Ba'alma. Now the 24 hours have... So again, you clean the Kli, you wait 24 hours. Now step three, you heat up a big pot of water and you put the non-kosher fork or whatever became treif in the water. The Ramah in Tafnun Beis in Aleph adds, you have to make sure the water is at a constant rolling boil for the Hagala to work. If the water is not boiling, the Hagala is no good. And the Mishnah Berurah over there explains, Ratzolomar, Shayora Hagadola Sheminichim Bakelim, Kol Shah Lahagil, Lo Tanua Hamayi Meriti Chasan, Kolzman Shaholich Umagilba, Da Oso Klishi Yaniachba, Achar Shenach Hamayim, Ein Olala Hagala, Imlo Shishach Liba, Achiachsor Viatiach Hamayim. If you put a Kli into water before it was at a rolling boil, then you need to leave it there until it gets back to a rolling boil. V'ine, teva hamayim d'nechim eritichasun k'shemachnisim bam kelim tzonim lahagil. Says in Mishnah Berurah, it's normal that when you put a cold Kli into boiling water, it stops boiling because it lowers the temperature of the water. Alkein tzarech lahamtin b'kol Kli ad sheyalu hamayim avabuos. So wait for each individual Kli till it boils again. He says a lot of times people who do Hagala, they're in such a rush and they're trying to get that. Hagala takes patience. If you're going to kasher all of your silverware for Pesach, you need to have patience. You need to take the time to do it properly. People just throw one in after the other. They used to have communal agalas, they still do in some communities, and you should have someone who knows what he's doing that's there at all times at the communal hagala. So when you put the Kli into that water in the hagala pot, it's going to cool down the water is going to lose its bubbling, so when you put the Kli in, you have to make sure you wait till it gets back to that bubble, at least to the extent that you're putting in kalim, too many kalim at a time, where it's going to be you're not going to have bittul b'shishim. The Ramah in Tafnun Beis Sif Hey says that only water should be used for agala. You shouldn't use other liquid for agala. But b'di'evad, as long as it's not a syrupy liquid, you could use that for agala. Maybe not today, but maybe tomorrow we'll talk about that. Rav Shechter has a beautiful piece on that in one of the Masorah journals about kashering with chocolate. That a chocolate factory wanted to kasher by boiling chocolate through the pipes. And that, what?
I think it's in the documents.
It's in the documents. Okay, fantastic. Yeah, have you...
Almost
there. All right, great. Once the water reaches a boil, then you remove the Kli from the valley of boiling water, and a minute gives to put the Kli into cold water. Why? So the assumption is that the non-kosher flavor that left the kli is now absorbed in the hot drops that are on the kli, and if you let those hot drops sit on the kli, the non-kosher flavor might re-enter the walls of the kli, which obviously wouldn't be a problem because it's already those in Tamluf Gam, but nevertheless, you put it in the cold, that's where the minhag developed, to put it under cold water to rinse off those drops. However, b'di'eved, if you don't put it in cold water, it's still kosher, because obviously, as we said, it's Eder Ben Yomo, so it's not going to be a problem. But that's the minhag. So when I'm kashering in my kitchen before Pesach, we kasher all the silver. It's my one job before Pesach. Our division of labor is my wife does everything, and I kasher a few pieces of silver. It's a great deal. And so I keep the cold water running in the sink. I have already kashered the sink. I keep the cold water running in the sink. And as I take each fork out of the boiling water, I just run it under the cold water and then put it on the towel that's next to it, that's next to the sink. An efficient system. So,
Tosis doesn't find the time
for that minhag.
Meaning he doesn't. So, like, I don't know whether the Marmakom maybe is getting like.
Yeah, I think so. I think Mishra Brewer explains that way. If I'm not mistaken. The Ramah in Sifpei says again that you can't drink the water of the Hagalah, and like we said, the glass says Zuchum of the Alma. What if your kli is too big? It doesn't fit into the Hagalah vat. So how do you kasher it? So there are a few different options. We were discussing some of them before. One possibility is dip half of the kli in the water, then flip the kli around and dip the second half of the kli. Meaning you don't have to get it all at the same time. The entire kli came into contact with the boiling water. That's good enough to affect Hagalah in the walls of the kli. Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Tafrin Aleph Si'if Yud Aleph. Option number two, which would only work for pots, is to fill up the pot with water all the way to the top, wait until it reaches a boil, and then drop in a scalding hot brick or a piece of hot metal, and the water will overflow, and that will be magil, the outside of the pot. And the reason you need the brick or the metal to be scalding hot is exactly the reason we just said before, because when you put something cold in a boiling pot, it will take down the boil, it will stop boiling. So you don't want the water to lose its boil. Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Tafnun Beis Sivav as an Eitzah. It doesn't have to be a stone, right? They sell like these kashering kits. So for just $49.99, you can get an Evan Melubenes, or for free, you can go downstairs to your basement and find a pair of pliers and, you know, heat it up and throw it into the, obviously you got to be careful, but, you can, find a hammer and drop that. It could be anything that you boil up. Option number three is to blowtorch a stone and heat up a pot of water. And when the water reaches a boil and the stone is scalding hot, put the stone in the kli that you need kashered and pour the hot water on the stone. And you move the stone around to all areas of the kli that need to be kashered. Meaning it's a gigantic pot, it's a huge stone pot, it doesn't fit into another pot to kasher. So I take this Evan Milubenes, I take this hot stone, and I do Eroi over the hot stone with boiling water, and the stone further heats the water as it hits in the pot. Mishabura explains the mechanics of that, why in the world does that work? So Mishabura and Sivkat and an Aleph up there says that since the stone is hot, it keeps the water at a boil. So it's as if Hagalah is being performed on the kli. It's Rebelski used to tell people who were kashering countertops for Pesach that they needed to do this. That you could do Hagalah on a countertop, but it's not going to be at a boil when it hits a countertop. So you need an Evan Melubenes running along the countertop as you're doing the Hagalah. Most poskim do not require that because countertops only really had... only ever became treif with Ewood. They never became treif with direct kli rishon. So it is only Ewood in the first place. But Rebelski used to suggest that for the countertops. It was always funny. I always watched in the pre-Pesach Q&As they used to have every year. You can find them online probably still, videos. Rav Schechter and Rebelski sitting at a table and someone reading them questions that came in from... You know, people would email in questions and someone would read the questions. And the person would just take turns addressing either Rav Schechter or Rav Belsky. And like, if you know Rav Schechter, you know that every single question Rav Belsky answered, Rav Schechter held differently. So it was just, it was like what people thought the halacha was that year completely depended on which one randomly got asked that question at that time. It was like, it was a little silly, but that's it. And they were so respectful of each other. You know, the whole time, like, you know that he doesn't agree with any of it. It's also, but they, okay, so it's a davar gush, so you machne like the mashal, that's called the kli rishon, so that's probably why Rabelski was.
According to
Rabelski's
notes for a tira bala, yeah. What's the Rajbo says that Isser can't be chal on a tam kalush.
Ah, right, right. We said that earlier this year, we had
it.
Yeah, we had that.
And then you cut through a hagala on him, so now it's a tam kalush at least.
Right. Yeah, we actually, right, we mamash learned that Rashi earlier this year. Okay, no. Right. I guess I need to chazen too. What?
We'd be making for the Rashi, we'd be making for the Rambam.
We'd be making for
we
the...
We need to call chametz a terrible as opposed to calling it...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So the idea is that that would be the equivalent of Hagala. So even though the stone doesn't touch every section of the pot, it heats up the water enough in its vicinity that it kashes the small areas where the stone can't reach. Meaning, obviously, the stone is not going to be shaped exactly like the pot, so it's not going to hit every mamish square centimeter of the pot, but you move it around as much as you can, and we assume that will get the water up to Hagala. This is quoted by the Ramah and Arachayim, Sim Tafin and Aleph, Sif Vav. Shulchan Aruch also says you could build a rim around the edge of a pot and boil it over based on the Gemara. Mishabura makes that point so this is just Yoni's point before. Mishabura actually says beferish that it only works if the pot only became tray from the inside. But if the pot taka became tray from the outside, then you have then these methods aren't going to work. Then you really need to kasher the outside of the pot. There is a shaila about kashrut with steam. I think there are some OU documents about this as well. Did we discuss yesterday a little bit about kashrut with steam?
Yeah.
So what?
In a self-clean oven.
A self-clean oven. I just mentioned that it doesn't work. So when it comes to meaning, steam is boiling water. So can I just take a steamer and run it across the pot, up and down the pot, and that way it will be a hagala. So Rav Meisha writes that you can't kash with steam because we have a tradition of how to do agala, and it was never done with any steam. However, he says, if you hold the steamer on the spot for long enough that it condenses and there's like a little puddle that's created, and you see that water boils, good, so then it's water, then it's not steam anymore, and then it's going to be good enough. But that would take a lot of time until the water gathers and gets to a boil. Poskim are makel to kash with steam if the original blia was with steam. If the original blia was not with steam, then they're a little more hesitant in terms of kashing with steam. There's something else I want to say about kashing with steam. I don't remember what. Okay, we'll have to take a look at those other documents and see if we can find. All right, let's stop there, and our homework will be the chocolate, the chef's piece and kashering with chocolate, and a little bit of kashering with steam, and then we'll pick up the next episode.
I remember
seeing
before that like the steam cools down. Do we say that that's a problem that steamers just don't get hotter?
So that's a practical problem with steamers. But there are steamers. If you spend $1,000, you can buy a steamer that will that is really, really, really hot and that it doesn't cool down on the surface. Most steamers, if you go to Bed Bath & Beyond and you buy their strongest steamer, the second it hits the counter, or the second it goes into the atmosphere, it's not hot anymore. Or it's not as hot, not nearly hot enough. So, yes, that's a practical problem, kashering with steam. But in an industrial setting, they have like these big steamers that cost like $1,200 that are, that do the job. Okay. All right. Have a good day.